The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
A mad scramble saves a playoff spot and might have given us a Heisman Trophy frontrunner unless another heroic effort did, and why Tennessee just can't seem to have nice things. This is the College Game Day podcast for Monday, November 21st. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel here. So, Pete, everybody in the top four of the college football playoff rankings won, but they won by a grand total of 26 points, largely all escaping. Georgia didn't escape as much as it slogged through, but everybody sort of escaped, and it almost underscores why the expanded playoff would be good this year, because I'm not sure that there is as much separation at the top as there has been in most years of the college football playoff.
Yes, well, I think I'll start by tipping my cap to the anonymous coach who pointed out the frailties in Georgia, who I now get mocked for every week on Twitter when Georgia methodically mulches some poor opponent. But I do think that if you are going to be a number one with a bullet infallible team, you need to have, and again, I don't want to bring up the Stetson Bennett debate 90 seconds into our podcast today, but like, he's not Trevor Lawrence is, you know, what I'm going to say. He's not Tua Tagovailoa. He's a really good college quarterback that I have a ton of respect for. And he is favored to lead them to back-to-back national titles, which puts him in some pretty rare air in our lifetimes. But I do think that some modest frailties on defense combined with a maybe lack of downfield dynamism there underscores the realities of this, that there could, if we had a 12-team playoff, there could be some upsets this year. And I do think there are some years where there won't be any upsets. There'll be some like methodical dispatchings. And then from five up, there'll be some fun home games. Right. So, well, there'd be buys on those early ones anyway, obviously. So, I think that this is going to be a fun finish. I do think there's probably a little less ambiguity and a little less fly in the ointment debate with Tennessee sort of clearing themselves out. But I do think that the, you know, USC at the doorstep, let's just take a moment and appreciate that. All right. USC hasn't been at the doorstep of much except irrelevancy, you know, pretty much since Pete Carroll left. So I really feel like and I was a little bit of a skeptic going into the season. I thought Lincoln Riley would do a good job. I was always all in on Caleb Williams. I just thought holistically, and look, their defense stinks. Like, there's really not any polite way to say that. They were awful against UCLA. But Corey Foreman, the former number one recruit in the country, drops off the end into coverage and makes an interception that saves the game on Saturday night. Like, they've got dudes, and you know, one of them made a play when it had to happen. I agreed with Joel Klatt, who ended up wrong. Like, if you punt, I really thought that was the accurate summation of that game. You and I were texting. You didn't think UCLA could stop him, and you were generally right about that too. Game went on, but I think USC as a potential interloper is pretty fascinating, and we get a one-loss conference champion for whoever comes out of our game on Saturday as the loser. I think that's a pretty good debate. I don't think there's a stand on the table argument there.
No, I agree. The 26 point margin, 20 points more or fewer, I guess is a better way to put it, 20 points fewer than the lowest combined margins of victory for the top four in the playoff era when all have won. 2017, there was a 46, and now you see just how close it was. The Ohio State
game. That's a Marissa Dowling stat. Let's just give her credit now.
Yeah, exactly. What is that? Is that where Taylor got that? Taylor sent me this.
Oh, stat Taylor sent it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he did, but he probably got it from Marissa, which is where most good stats come from. But yes. Yeah, it's, you know, it it's sort of, you looked at the team Saturday and you watched TCU have a very, very close, in my judgment, to dumb loses more than smart wins moment when they rush the field goal team on. You know, I know they do the fire drill, but most of the time that's the product of necessity rather than choice. And, you know, because of the way they handled the spike on second down, then they ran the ball and they had to go out there. But you know what? The more I thought about it, Pete, all of this stuff, which I detest the icing the kicker thing. And we're flowing around here. Everybody that's listening to this podcast knows that TCU beat Baylor by 1 point or a walk-off field goal. But the TV host in me almost feels compelled to say that off the top before we change subjects. So they rushed the field goal unit on, and everybody, including me, is like, but I was traveling to the airport and I was keeping up. Pollock came up to me in the airport and actually gave me the rundown. I went back and watched, and you're thinking, what are they doing? And then you think, you know what? All of the stupid timeouts that coaches call to ice kickers, and sometimes the timeout that a coach is called to set up the field goal unit can be a de facto icing of their own kicker. What if you just ran him out there and said, kick the thing through, kid, let's do this. And, you know, so maybe Sonny Dykes, you know, you say, is he insane or is he so sane that he was the only one that really understood the best chance they had to pull that game out of the fire? I'll make a couple of big declarations from this past weekend, one of them from this game. Caleb Williams has been sensational, but Max Duggan is my Heisman front runner.
Woo!
He had the Heisman moment. Caleb did too, but that was more holding somebody off, and it was fantastic. And look, I may end up changing by the time I cast my vote. There's more data to come in here. But Saturday, he saved them again. I mean, you know, without some of the threats, he saved them. And that
and if
is
you
weren't also
watching. Did you see the 2-point conversion drop?
Yes, I did.
Stone cold drop off his hands. I want to give a hustle award to David Wilson, one of my ESPN.com colleagues, who got the TCU special teams coach on the phone last night to reiterate that they practiced that play. So it's called Bazooka. Is their play. And he said they practice it every Thursday. And the special teams coach at TCU, Mark Tomerdahl, good day to be Mark Tomerdahl on Saturday, by the way, was a little bit annoyed that, like, they were like, yeah, we practice every Thursday. I was sitting at the Bozeman Airport bar. I give the good people of Montana credit. The game was not on because they're watching Montana State, as they should be, at the Bozeman Airport bar. So I had my laptop up. There was a couple of guys from our game day crew flanked aside me. And when they spiked it on second down, I said, I don't agree with that, because you really can't, like, with 22 seconds, my thought was, you can't roll out Max Duggan and have a play that takes 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, like, all of a sudden you got to run this field goal unit out. I was like, I would have run it on second down, spiked it on third, and done that. I said, if they run the ball here, it is going to be, I was like, I don't think they can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my instinct. Now, again, there's analytics books, and that's why they have their Thursday practice to practice Bazooka. But I was like, I literally was like standing up being like, no, like it was like watching a car accident. And then they show the big shot, and the kicker is like just walking off the sideline, like totally casual. Mm-hmm. And doesn't get his steps, doesn't measure it off, just walks up and like literally walked it off. It was unbelievable. That was like one of the great moments of the season. Like, holy gosh, it was something to watch. It was like, no, and I'm not rooting for anybody, but it's just this great moment. And like, there it is, just like unfolding in this really casual, awkward way. But hey, good for them, man. That was the kick of that kid's life. The celebration was unbelievable. The team Sonny celebration, like, you know, that's a top five moment of college football season right there. Just the collision of everything that happened, that they need to kick, use the timeouts, force the punt, move the ball, the whole thing. So hats off to the Horned Frogs. I had stopped being a skeptic a couple weeks ago, and I maintain my place with my tongue firmly planted on the hypnotoad. I'm enjoying the rush.
Weekend Review is brought to you by Eckrich Smoked Sausage. Find them in the refrigerated meat aisle at your favorite grocery store to create one-of-a-kind sausage recipes. Eckrich, You do you. Now, I wasn't watching with you in the Bozeman Barn because I spent a little time watching the Brawl of the Wild before we ended up catching the flight. That is an intense atmosphere for sure. Just a brief touch on that, to go out the horses running out and then running back in with the flags at the beginning. And I mean, they are saying mean things to the other side. In fact, there was a dude, the one thing on the sideline, there's certain, you know, Pete and I are fortunate and blessed in our jobs. We watch a lot of games from the sideline. It's not quite the decorum level of the press box, right? But at the same time, if you're at Tennessee for the Tennessee Florida game, Tennessee Alabama game, or Georgia for, you know, big Georgia game or something, wherever you are, Notre Dame, you're expected, if you're on the sideline, you're expected to kind of behave a certain way. Well, there were people on the Montana State sideline that were screaming at the opposing players, like the screaming at the Grizz. Like one of them, every time, you know, there'd be a little pushing and shoving when they got up. This dude standing beside me would yell, "How did you get so tough? How did you get so tough?" Like that. He was like screaming this vitriolic screaming. Then there were far more graphic things being yelled at them from the actual stands. But I sort of chuckled. I was like, they call it a brawl. We're in the wild, and it's both of those things. But not much of a fight. I mean, that was one of those when I left pretty early that, well, Montana's a good team, that when you see somebody gashing everybody for 8 yards every time they run it, there is no sign that they're going to be able to stop it. I was like, I looked at the guy with me who was going to the airport. I was like, after the second drive, I was like, this one's in the books. I said, that ain't changing. You know, you see things sometimes early in the game and you know it's not changing. In direct contrast was South Carolina and Tennessee, which as I watched that unfold, I kept thinking, well, okay, it's going to end here. Well, okay, they're not going to score this time. Well, they're not going to score this time. And yet, South Carolina, which put a whopping total of 6 points on the board against Florida the week before, they scored touchdowns on their first 6 real drives of the game or something like that. That was, I think that was the best single game performance of the season, what South Carolina did to Tennessee Saturday night.
I think the most out of character, they've had some nice games and some nice wins, but it was like the most stunning single game performance because it was just not indicative of how Spencer Rattler had played all year. So I give Shane Beamer a lot of credit, Marcus Satterfield a lot of credit. A lot of times when you're a big underdog or an underdog, I don't know if they're a huge one, and you jump out to a huge lead like that, your football instincts tell you to take the foot off the gas, to run the ball, to get conservative. And they kept that pedal and the hammer down. Like they knew they needed to score 60 and they coached that way, which is not an intuitive way to coach as an underdog. So I give them a ton of credit for that. Happy for Spencer Rattler, right? Like he's had a rough trip this year. And obviously, you know, last season didn't end the way he wanted when Caleb Williams, Wally pipped him in the Texas game. So I really feel like that, it's, you know, that was just a nice moment for him. You got to remember, this kid goes into the 2021 season thinking he might be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. And there he is sort of toggling around on the, you know, on the sidelines, you know, in a different place the next year. So, but a stunning result. Obviously, I think we got to say a little bit about Hendon Hooker, Reese. Just that was one of the most heartbreaking moments of the season. We were lucky enough to be around Hendon a couple times in our trips to Knoxville. Met his parents, wonderful people. Hendon Hooker was, you know, the feel good story of this as a player of this college football season. 6 year guy, found the right place, found the right system, figured it out, right? Yeah. Like in just, it was this perfect collision. And, you know, one thing that's great about college football is all paths aren't linear. Everybody's not Caleb Williams who shows up, gets the job and just takes off like a rocket ship. Mm-hmm. You have to face adversity, overcome it. You know, there's just different things. And he made an unbelievable decision in the portal to find a place that matched his skill set. And, you know, obviously with December 5th coming and the portal about to turn into this Niagara Falls of that, it's I hope that there's, you know,
I hope there's a lot of matches like the Hendon Hooker Tennessee match, because that may go down as the best portal match of all time. I mean, if you had told me Hendon Hooker would turn into a Heisman candidate, he was a good quarterback at Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. but there was mm-hmm. nothing about him that screamed greatness from his mm-hmm. time there. He was talented, he was a good player, but there was nothing where you thought it was going to be one of the faces of the sport, and he became that. So I give him a lot of credit. I give Hype a lot of credit for finding someone who would fit in his system. And obviously Hooker's out with ACL the rest of the year. It's going to obviously impact his draft status, his draft prep, et cetera. Let's just hope he gets a shot on the other side, because he's earned it.
Well, I hope so. And I'll echo what you said. I mean, Hendon's a great man of faith. Been, as you mentioned, been around his parents a couple of times. And I mean, you know, as us older generation people do, complimented them on the great way they had reared their son. And, you know, it was a heartbreaking thing for Hendon individually. Collectively, and, you know, look, it wasn't him. They scored a bunch of points, but the Tennessee defense wasn't up to the challenge. And it was surprising, Pete, because it was so off brand for South Carolina, but it was also precise and brilliant, because the other thing they did, I mean, it's easy to say, look, they gave up a bunch of yards. They controlled, maybe didn't shut down, but they controlled Jalen Hyatt. They didn't let him just destroy them, as he has, you know, so many other teams this year. They moved the ball with precision. You mentioned the aggressiveness. Look, when USC steps up and has a great performance, right? You know, everything doesn't always have to be perfect, because they've got this elite talent, right? And sometimes that just outshines everything. Caleb can dance around. He can find Jordan Addison, makes a guy miss, and, you know, and everything goes well. Same thing certainly true with CJ Stroud and Marvin Harrison and all of those receivers there. South Carolina doesn't have that. They've got good players. They've got a talented quarterback. The ball is coming out great Saturday night from Spencer Rattler, but Ooh. They don't have that. That's why I think that performance from a team standpoint was the best one of the season. Because what is it that coaches say they want to do with their teams? They want to maximize them. They want to give them a chance to play at their very best. That's what Shane Beamer and his staff got out of South Carolina for one brilliant moment on Saturday night. There's going to be a lot of overreaction to this. And they're going to say, oh, look out, Clemson. Oh, look out, Clemson. Here comes old Cocky. They're ready now. It's still the same bunch that scored 6 against Florida. If memory serves, I think they scored 10 against Missouri. Click worked fast enough. Yes, correct. 10 against Missouri, 6 against Florida, and 2 of the previous 3 games before Saturday night. So I'm not getting carried away with it for what it means going forward, although 4-4 in the SEC and another 7-win season and at least a shot to beat Clemson. But to go in against Tennessee, 22-point underdog, really no shot. We even said that on game day. I mean, you know, I sort of said, what would it take for either South Carolina or Kentucky to pull the upset on Saturday? The best thing we got was, you know, South Carolina's blocked a bunch of kicks, as you might expect from a Beamer-led outfit. And I think only Notre Dame's blocked more in over the course of the season. Nobody expected a precise performance on offense and a controlling one on defense. Now, I'm not trying to make them, you know, the 85 Bears or something like that. The defense gave up yards. And they gave up plays, but they didn't just let them always, you know, make it easy. You know what I mean? They did a pretty good job covering. And I think it was the best single game performance of the year by any team, because they absolutely maxed out. And when challenged, which they were when Tennessee got it back to 35-31, when challenged, they answered. And because, you know, I actually sent Shane a note and told him that. I thought it was the best single game performance by any team this year.
Yeah, I thought his comments were pretty compelling in the post game. Other than Jonathan Wiley, our friend from Game Day, being far too prominent in the post game interview. I don't know if you saw Shane's interview on the field, but it was like, I was like, is Holly interviewing Wiley or is he interviewing Shane? Is she interviewing Wiley or is she interviewing Shane? Now he was obviously, you know, holding people off Holly in that. But I thought, you know, he said, this is what this place can become. And it was a pretty compelling scene. It was pretty neat. And that's what college football is. One raucous night in Columbia, South Carolina, where everybody storms the field and feels like part of it. You know, you didn't have maybe the season you wanted, but you showed improvement and you ended one of your division rivals, you know, playoff quests. Like that's a pretty good night. And you got to stun the nation and hang 63.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is there anything to now? Last week we saw, and look, I'm asking. I don't know the answer to this. And if anybody would, it would be you, the authority with all the connections you have. Is there anything to Heupel was, you know, gunning it down the field, albeit with Joe Milton against Missouri last week, and that game was way out of hand. And you know, South Carolina had the thing won, and they stuck another one on them just for fun. To make it 63-31, and they took a, you know, they took a shot downfield and got a big gain out of it when they got into plus territory. Anything going on there? I mean, are there messages being sent, or was that simply internal? We're not going to let up. This is how we're going to play at South Carolina. You got any sense of that?
So I got the sense that it did not go unnoticed on the Tennessee sideline that they scored late there. Let's put it that way. And that, well, you know,
true, now, but I mean, the Missouri could say the same thing. I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, oh, Sheila. I mean, Tennessee ran it up last week now.
Yes. Well, that is, those coaches who play that style tend to take their foot off the gas last, right? Mm-hmm. If you go back to Art and those guys, you know, when they were at Baylor, they certainly weren't, you know, tucking and taking knees in the third and fourth quarter when they were upsetting the apple cart in the Big 12 there. So I do think, I think those guys meet on the recruiting trail quite a bit, Reese. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about Jalen Hyatt's from South Carolina. I believe he didn't have a South Carolina offer, and that was one of the things. I think they came up on game day, but I think that was one of the things there. So I just think that, like, they wanted to let the recruits certainly know that South Carolina is there. But I did not, you know, because I was checking in on Hooker, obviously, on Sunday. I didn't really dive into some of the behind the scenes machinations of that. But that when the old Gamecocks roll into Neyland next season, I don't think that final moment will be forgotten.
No. But you know what? I mean, if you don't like it, stop it.
I agree. I don't get caught up in that stuff.
Yeah, like, I don't either. I just wondered, because it was a little bit off brand. And I just wondered if it was a little retaliation, or, you know, it would be one thing if Tennessee had that opportunity and did it to Alabama, you know, or did it to Georgia. But doing it to Missouri last week, not that they shouldn't have. I mean, again, if Missouri doesn't like it, stop it. And Milton was in the game, and when the backups were in, they deserved to play. Sure. But that was the first thing I thought when South Carolina did it to them. I was like, I wonder if there's a little bit in those SEC coaching circles, recruiting battles of, you know, wanting to, you know, make sure Tennessee knows that they're not necessarily the only ones that'll, you know, kick you while you're down a little bit.
It's Nick saying he didn't do it
on behalf of Drinkwitz.
Suggesting that at all. I'm just saying if there is a reputation thing going around that I don't know, you know, I'm just stirring the pot here a little bit. It makes it fun.
I like it. I'm all for pot stirring. I think you said on game day that you embraced the petty, and that made me feel good. I felt like that was a little bit of me rubbing off on you.
So. The petty that I found that I mentioned on game day that I embraced was, I don't know that it necessarily is as prominent in other teams' game notes. Oklahoma's game notes had front page, but it wasn't right at the top, but it was like maybe third paragraph on the series. It didn't just point out the overwhelming edge that Oklahoma has on Oklahoma State historically. It made it a special note to say that they were 14-3, now 15-3 against Mike Gundy led Oklahoma State teams. I do think they spared the fact that Mike was winless as a player, as a quarterback against him too. But I was like, okay,
we're gonna Mike Houck tweaking the bear at Oklahoma. Mike Houck's been around for all those games, I would think. So he's got a long memory of Sooner dominance. So how about Oklahoma State falling off the cliff, Reese? Now I know Sanders hasn't been up to snuff, but like that is not a program that has shown us much quit in the past. And I'm not saying they did quit, but boy, have they rolled over and been as bad as we've seen them in the last 10 years.
It's shocking because, you know, I don't know that I really expected them to be great in the early part of the season. They lost so much on defense from a year ago. And, you know, Jim Knowles left and everything, but as important as Knowles leaving, he's terrific. I'm not trying to downplay what he accomplished at Oklahoma State and is accomplishing at Ohio State. But more important was that they lost the guts of their defense, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But then the way they started and to see the way they've, the way they've sort of gone belly up here has been shocking. I mean, they've got to beat West Virginia Saturday. They're going to have a losing record in the Big 12. You're still bowl eligible, but I mean, within conference play. So it's been pretty surprising. What did you make of late night? What did you make of Oregon and Utah? That was sort of a slop fest.
I have to ask you, you get up at 4 a.m. on these Saturdays. How do you stay awake? Like, do you drink that much Dr. Pepper? You say you're immune to caffeine. I was like, I woke up in the fourth quarter. There were 6 minutes left. Like, I'm going to watch the rest of this. And then I woke up at like 3:15 and went to bed. So I obviously cobbled together what happened and I could talk about it fluidly. But like, I just like you woke up at 4 a.m. in Bozeman, Montana. You flew back to Florida and you were just like pepped up and wide awake. Like, are you a robot?
No, I I've done that before and it's very, very frustrating to me when I'm trying to watch a game and I'm falling asleep and I wake up and it's late or it's over sometimes, but I don't know why it didn't happen. It didn't happen Saturday night. I was into it. I think I was driving home from the airport and listening to the end of the SC-UCLA game, which you've mentioned doing. Fun. Yeah, mentioning doing that before, and I was going back and forth, and I happened to be on the UCLA broadcast when the final interception happened, and it was because if they had scored, I wanted to hear the jubilation, and so I don't know, I got in, I was into it, and watching the game, and it was not a tough game, hard nosed game, Bo Nix, you know. Gritty, gutty, all of that stuff that we sportscasters say, but it was not a particularly well-played game, and Cam Rising certainly didn't have his best night. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I guess, you know, you get overly influenced by what you see on a given Saturday, and you look at it and you go, these guys can't beat SC. You know, after what I'd watched on the plane flying back and then listened to at the end, you're like, all right, well, okay, SC's going to win out. But I guess if last week taught us nothing else is that we should expect more of this going forward, of the unexpected buzzsaw to pop up in the most inopportune of moments for the contenders.
Yeah, I felt for Cam Rising, who's had a really good career and after transferring from Texas, really found a niche there and gutted it out. He obviously had the three interceptions, the Utes after, you know, showing some spark in the third and getting back in it, just really couldn't muster a lot together in the fourth. And How about this for a prediction, Reese? Bo Nix, who clearly gutted it out. He had obviously the carry at the end on the gimpy ankle. I think that was his only designed run carry to sort of get the first down and help seal things up. How about Bo Nix returns to Oregon and is the leading contender for the Heisman Trophy with Caleb Williams and Drake May in 2023? What do you think about that for a prediction?
I'll buy that. I mean, and that probably would be completely dependent on what the scouts are telling Bo about his draft status, I would guess.
Don't think he's in that top tier, right? Like, yeah, if there's five, fair. And that's not a knock on Bo Nix. We just haven't seen enough good, consistent football. Like, he's been excellent since that Georgia game this year, right? Mm-hmm. But do you just want, if you're a scout, another offseason in the same system, at the same place? They're going to, you know, you're Oregon, you're going to be favored in 10 or 12 games. Does he go back and really show? Now, they did a lot of horizontal stuff in that offense this year, which was great. It got him comfortable. Mm-hmm. He didn't make mistakes. Maybe we see a little small evolution to go a little more vertical and show some evolution. He's an older guy now, but I just
he's
think
married.
Like,
yeah.
Yes, it, yeah. Exactly. But I just think if Kenny Dillingham stays, he's in the mix for Arizona State job, but I would expect him to be back at Oregon. And Bo Nix stays, and nobody's going to like harvest the portal quite like Oregon, right? Like, you could really build something around him. And credit Dan Lanning, that program got completely body slammed twice by Utah last year. We've talked about it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end of the day, something in the DNA changed enough. Now, they have veteran linemen who have a lot of pride. They came back, obviously. But something in the program DNA changed for where they got – they were not in the game for a snap in the second half of both those Utah games last year. And they certainly turned the tide on that. So credit to Dan Lanning. And that's like a starting February 1st, you know, when you take over and start your offseason conditioning change. That's not, you know, I drew up some play on a Tuesday and you know, for like that is a holistic program evolution that's happened under Lanning. So tip of the cap to him and what he's built there. And if we do end up Ducks and Trojans, I think that's pretty fun. And I think that's the best scenario for the Pac-12 because that gives USC the opportunity to hit a hat trick here at the end. Now, Notre Dame's obviously not a pushover. They're all of a sudden, you know, knocking on the door of the top 10, which is not something we thought we'd be saying after the Marshall game or the Stanford game.
Stanford game is worse. I really think the Stanford loss was worse than the Marshall loss.
I don't know. Marshall's pretty bad.
Stanford, you can't lose that game. It's almost like a spot thing for me, Pete. I mean, not to take us off track on that, but to me, the Marshall loss came after the disappointment of Notre Dame. It's easy to see them overlooking them. And look, Marshall's 7-4. You know, I mean, I know it's Sun Belt, but I mean,
Sun Belt's good.
Yeah, Sun Belt's good, but they caught him in a spot. Yeah. You know. And Stanford didn't catch him in a spot. Notre Dame just played horribly. And
well, let me ask you this then. We're going to talk about Stanford on the podcast.
Do you think David Shaw should be back next year?
Yes. Okay. I don't even bat an eye about that. Okay. They were more restrictive in their restrictions relative to COVID than just about anybody else. They couldn't get anybody there for visits. If you can get people on campus at Stanford, you got a shot, you know, if you can get them in. So it's gotten a little sideways. He's shown the capacity to adjust. Do they need better results? Of course they do. But it's also a place I think that values tenure that he's been there, and he'll have ample opportunity to get it fixed. Now he needs to get it fixed. You have another one like this one, and then maybe it's different, but I think he absolutely should and will be back. I think he is still in the period of time where the only way he would leave Stanford is if he decides to leave Stanford. And I don't think that's going to happen right now, but yeah, Oregon's got a tough one this week, too. I agree with you on Lanning because it's the reason. I think you might have picked Utah, too. I can't remember. I know I did.
I picked Utah.
Yeah, and the reason I did was because of just that. It's like, show me you can stand up to Utah. And they did. And this is another thing that as these coaching hires start to unfold that is really interesting to me. People always say, well, you need to start being a head coach someplace where you can make mistakes. And it's probably true that you can make more mistakes at Oregon than you could at, say, Georgia, you know, where Lanning came from as an assistant. That's probably true, but you can't make a lot, you know, and there's some people who just understand how to do it. And in this day and age, and only 1 year return, I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame or anything like that. But it's been, to me, it's been really impressive the way he's gone about his business at Oregon in the first year. And he has all of the makings and the looks on the outside of being that guy who didn't really need to get seasoned in Conference USA for a few years before he got his quote unquote big opportunity. Some guys are like that. You know, some guys can step in and do it. I mean, college football is littered with guys who stepped in as head coaches in big spots and done fine. I think of Bob Stoops, you know, for instance, who, by the way, you want a funny aside? I got a call from Stoops on Friday, right? And I'm sitting in the office and my phone buzzes and says, Bobby Stoops. And I was like, And before I can answer it, he hangs up. So I thought it was probably a mistake. And, a few hours later, he texts me and he goes, sorry about that. That was an accidental call earlier and sent some emoji or something, to which I responded. And Friday, remember, Pete, was the XFL draft. And I said, terribly disappointing, Bob. I thought you were about to draft me.
I think, like Reese said,
he got a little kick. You could line up in line. You could flex out. I could see that. You know, maybe flash some nickel. You really contribute all phases of special teams too. You know,
yeah, he got a little.
You weren't going to be a high round pick, so no. I think we really need you showing up on teams.
Yeah, probably so. I got to find a way to earn my keep and be able to make a roster at that point too. But I mean, you know, Bobby didn't need any. He didn't need any seasoning. He just got it. He understood how to be a head coach. There are plenty of other guys like that, but there's also the other thing too. So you are gambling. Anytime that you hire a guy with either no head coaching experience or limited head coaching experience, it's a gamble. But if you feel strongly about a guy, there are some that just understand how to do it and they step right into the role, because even guys who've been head coaches 25 years make mistakes. I mean, heck, your guy Sonny Dykes you thought he was going to let the clock run out.
If you had taken a poll for me at 12 seconds, I would have said no effing way at the Bozeman Airport bar my laptop. I was like, whoa. Yeah. Sportsman, you can't. That was one of the most fun moments of the season. I was like, hands on the bar, like, oh my God. You know, it's great. It was just total adrenaline shot. And kicker just lines up, walks up, doesn't step off his steps, casually crushes it home. You know, bazooka, baby. We'll remember bazooka for a long time.
We'll remember bazooka. And also, it's the weekend of the kickers. Maybe I need to bring this up Saturday McAfee will be all in. Pollock will be opposed to this, I'm sure. But you've got bazooka winning it for TCU. And then you have Jake Moody at Michigan. And Harbaugh's nominating him for Michigan legendary status for saving their unbeaten season and kicking the game-winning field goal against Illinois.
Yeah. How about Pat's description of kicking a cold football in Bozeman on Saturday? I thought that was one of the most creative descriptions, with the ice cream cone, with the chocolate shell.
You got to bite through the chocolate.
It was so relatable. Everybody knows that chocolate shell. It's like...
I can't imagine kicking a football in Bozeman on Saturday.
It must have been like kicking a stone.
Before we move on, there's one quick thing I want to mention. The NBA is off and running. Get your basketball fix with the Low Post. Zach Lowe, talking basketball with the smartest people in the business. Now twice a week, follow the Low Post wherever you're listening to this podcast.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What was your best moment from the set when you think about that game day 10 years from now? And it was awesome, scenic, fun, choreographed swearing, like you mentioned earlier, like I've never heard before. What do you think your favorite like moment you'll remember 5 years from now?
Oh man. Well, one, when I went out there, I couldn't feel my toes in about 5 minutes. And I realized that my choice to wear the waterproof socks, thinking that that would be the best shield from the cold, was an erroneous one and should have gone with that. Also should have just gone full winter boots instead of trying to maintain the style and go dress shoes. Catastrophic mistake on my part, by the way. So I'll certainly remember that. But I think just probably just the enthusiasm that the people had, the reaction that, you know, that you'd get anytime you mentioned anything about the state of Montana, Brawl of the Wild. They were in it, and just the, you know, I always struggle with how to say this because I don't want to make it sound, you know, so condescending. I don't mean it like that at all, but the gratitude that they had for the show coming there was kind of overwhelming, and it was it was really, really appreciated. So, I mean, those things were fun. Seeing that drone fly around at the end when LC put on the headgear, LC saying, "I love this weather." When when I'm not even sure the people of Bozeman loved that weather as cold as it was. There were great moments out there. I think. Just being out on set, having the Montana State band walk around in front of me while I was leading to the Stanford Cal play was kind of fun. I wanted to run over a trombone player, but they wouldn't let me. So,
how about McAfee taking the bull?
Oh, that was amazing. Hey, I want to tell
good
you this
form.
Yeah, I've done that before. I did back in the old days in local TV. I had this thing called Working for a Living in Columbus, Georgia. Would go out and do somebody's job. Rodeo came to
baby.
Town. Yeah. Rodeo came to town once. So I went out and did this. Now, let me say, I didn't do what Pat McAfee did because they had the one they gave me was like, I mean, he must have been a baby. He was, you know, he was new. He was a little guy. That one that Pat wrestled down was that was a steer. That was impressive on McAfee's part going with the rodeo team, taking that thing down. That was amazing.
That was not an FCS steer.
No.
That was a Power 5 steer.
No, mine was the steer I did way, way back in the day. He was like a NAIA walk-on. He wasn't even D3. You know, he was like maybe high school JV going to grow into something someday, but he wasn't there yet. And that was, you know, that was scary enough. That was a real thing that Pat did. That was amazing. So,
that was really, 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 really impressive. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, it was, and the media availability that we do on Fridays too, that was fun. I got to channel my inner Mike Leach. They asked me if I'd rather, you know, face off with a bobcat or a grizzly. So I sort of launched in.
Did you do the cough?
I did. I was so tempted, Pete, because I was doing Leach without doing the voice purposely, right? And I was so tempted at one point to just stop and start coughing and then carry on as if nothing had happened, and opted not to. But there will be a lot of moments. I have a tough time with that sometimes in the immediate aftermath. And I still consider a couple of days the immediate aftermath of the show, thinking back and saying, what moments do you like? It's like the social media people will come to you sometimes. Is there anything from the show you'd like to clip and put on social media? And I'm like, I'm not sure what just happened. You're going to have to give me a little while to digest what we just accomplished, because, you know, we got heavy again, which means we're running short on times. So we were, you know, that's what we do, because it's not a scripted show. It's an organized show, but it's not a scripted show. We get late. You bear the brunt of that. I feel badly about that a lot of times on Saturdays, because every now and then you're one of the ones. All of us sacrifice some, but you're one of the ones who you take heavy hits sometimes in terms of getting things cut.
That's okay.
That's why I try to give you a shout out when I see the tweets pop up on the screen, which are amazing, by the way. And because I'm leading to something here. The thing is, I want to give you the shout out on the tweets, because you've brought something to game day that game day's desperately needed for years. And that's up to the second information on stuff that those who might participate in games of chance are interested in, or just hardcore fans are interested in. And also great insight on things like coaching searches and all these different things. And it's like, because of this podcast and that I think people have started to think of us as someone who is two guys who might someday star in a buddy movie. So that's what that was the intent with the selfie that our podcast friends here have made great sport of, because you and I happen to be seated next to each other on the flight from Bozeman.
Yeah, we actually had 5 different games going at once. I was pretty impressed by that. You had one on your laptop, one on your TV. I had one on my TV, and then I had 2 YouTube TVs opened up. And I was like, you know, for 30,000 feet, this isn't bad. Like, it was pretty good. Occasionally I'd nudge you on like a big third down on one of my games. Occasionally you nudge me. We didn't actually really talk that much, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, you know, we did it. You were a really good seatmate, because we talked some, but then we both wanted to watch games. So we were doing our things. And I hopefully didn't do what I do on the podcast and talk way too much. But, you know, I tried to keep it tight, too.
We were untalkative and disciplined. It was rare for us.
So Taylor and Sarah, they made fun of our picture that we put on Instagram. They tried to say they didn't, but they did.
Yeah, there was some patronizing going on there. But that's fine. We'll take it. I was just relieved when you have to fly home on a Saturday and it's literally like from Bozeman to Boston. There's no directs. I was just like relieved that I would be able to watch games. Like, that's the nightmare, is you're just gonna spend 8 hours, like, you know, trying to get Wi-Fi on your phone to get like refresh updates. So thank you to the good people at Delta for getting some live TV and the good internet so you could stream a couple games. That was
key.
Very, very clutch. Was a significant game changer.
On the next flight home, I was sitting by a gentleman, a man. I won't give his last name. I don't want to call him out. His name was Markel, and he sat down, and you know, he was, I guess, a football fan. He was watching, and as the Tennessee South Carolina game kept going on, he was like. Punching and jumping in his seat a little bit, not overly so, not in a really bad way, but he's reacting. You know, I do this. My wife laughs at me when I watch games. You know, I don't even have to be emotionally involved. I like do this thing almost subconsciously. Like, as the play goes, I tighten up and start leaning and pushing my leg to, you know, waiting to see if the tackle. I don't know why I do it. I just do. It's not so much a thing that if I'm at the game as if when I'm sitting there watching. He was doing a lot of that. So at one point, he seemed happy that South Carolina had scored. So, and I had the SC game on. And fortunately for me, he was watching South Carolina, Tennessee. I'm watching SC.
Oh, that's perfect. You know,
yeah, so that was very helpful. And so I said to him, I said, "Oh, Gamecock fan?" And he said, "No." He said, "Just the SEC." And then the truth came out. Then he said, "Not like Alabama." So he was sitting there basically rooting.
I thought you were going to say bet on it.
He was actually sitting there just basically rooting against Tennessee, which was, you know, sort of the essence of college football. So
yes, no, that's nothing wrong with rooting against. I root against the Yankees. I'm a Red Sox fan, right? Like that's way more fun than, you know, anything. But like a second thing I like in baseball, like other than the Red Sox winning, the Yankees losing is just fine by me. And if it's like a grueling playoff loss or like a really you know, just like a ghoulish no show, that's pretty satisfying.
It came when I don't really have an NBA team that I follow anymore, but when I was a kid, because I loved Julius Erving, Andrew Tony Mochik, so especially Dr. J, but I loved all the Sixers teams. I felt that way about your beloved Celtics when I was growing up. I mean, it was a good day, a good playoff series when the Sixers won, a better one when the Celtics lost. So, you know, that's I can identify with the feeling, too.
You won't be saying that about Joe Mazzulla's red hot shooting Celtics this year. former Mountaineer guards got the Celtics. He's got a bunch of Steph Currys out there. I think they lead the NBA in 3-point shooting. They are a juggernaut.
I've lost that type of intensity about it. I'm not really a Sixers fan anymore. That kind of after Moses Malone and kind of deeper, a little bit later into the '80s, that sort of waned. So I've moved away from being,
you know, it's interesting. My friends who have kids tell me that like the younger generation doesn't root for teams as much as they root for individuals.
That's
like,
right.
They follow them on social media. They have the jersey, like they,
yeah,
like a Devin Booker. And that's mm-hmm. like who they're not like as into the team part of it. It's interesting. It's an interesting evolution and kind of an interesting part. I don't think we'll ever see that as much in college because like the colleges you attend there, there's, mm-hmm. 20,000 alumni graduate every year. You have an inherent fan base. You are from the state of Tennessee, generically, like, you know. But I do think that's an interesting evolution on the pro side where, and again, it mirrors what the pro athletes are doing too. So it makes sense as a sport trend. But anyway.
I wonder how much the transfer portal, I mean, you don't have enough time to establish yourself to develop that type of following in most cases in college, but you're going to see some of that movement that you see in, or you're already seeing it, that you see in professional sports. Maybe a guy like Caleb Williams would have taken some casual fans with him, people outside of Oklahoma who were starting to root for Oklahoma because they liked Caleb Williams, sure, might have migrated to USC along with him. But yeah, as a big rule, you're not going to have, you know, wide swaths of young fans decide that they're, you know, moving from, you know, Oklahoma to USC simply because of one player who'll be there for a couple of years. Let's go back quickly to a couple of things. We haven't talked Georgia except just touched on it, and Ohio State. You mentioned about Georgia's vulnerabilities. The one thing about that game, and there are always little moments, inflection points in games where everything could have gone differently.
Sure.
When Kentucky stopped them on the goal line, Georgia was about to go 22-0 and should have. They go 22-0. They probably win 29-0, if not 36. But then Kentucky got a jolt of energy. They came back. They came close to getting back in the game. I don't know, man. I'm not saying they're invincible like some of these teams. And I hear what you're saying about Stetson. You know that I'm a president of the Stetson Bennett fan club, at least co-president with Polly. I still think if fully engaged and, you know, if someone is doubting them or if there's big stakes, and I'm not saying that's always, you always want to play to the standard every week. I still think Georgia's that team, man. I just do. Can they lose? Of course they can lose. And they do lack the home run threats on the outside. Their big running plays come from Bowers or McConkey, you know, on various iterations of the end around. So, I mean, I see all of that. And I know they don't have the 5 first-round draft picks up there, but they still stout on defense. They got guys who can cover. I don't know. I still think they're that team. And mostly it's, are they fully engaged and interested and not approaching a game like, yeah, of course we're going to win. You know, if they're like, oh, yeah, you want to see us? I think you get what you get against Oregon, what you got against Tennessee, and probably what you're going to get when they play LSU.
So let me ask you this. Ohio State plays
Georgia next Saturday at SoFi Stadium. No weather, no fan. You know, what do you favor Georgia by?
Three and a half.
Yeah, I was going to say 4.5.
So yeah,
that's there. My point isn't to nitpick Georgia. It's just to say there's not this aura of infallibility here.
I agree. Yeah,
which is great, by the way. Like, mm-hmm. like there's nothing worse than like, if they're 21 points better than the field as a fan, like we don't root for teams, but we want great games, right?
Yeah,
I would love to see this Ohio State Michigan game be just this white knuckle brawl that goes down into the fourth quarter. We'll talk about that game a lot more as the week goes on here, but like, this is what we want. Like, you know, the Ryan Day mulching Don Brown's defense games were great if you're a Buckeye, but they're not great for consumers. So we want drama. Just like we want petty and drama. That's all we ask. Talkative, undisciplined, seeking petty and drama.
I never felt like in watching Ohio State Maryland either on Saturday. And man, credit to Tungavailoa and to Loxley's team and really their defense from fighting their guts out of kind of giving them a chance. And I sort of feel about Ohio State the way I do about Georgia. You know, he started asking what's wrong with them after the Northwestern game. And then you have this game. It's clearly the sandwich game, the look ahead game for them. I never felt like they were going to lose that game. Even when Maryland got it back late, I was like, this is not going to happen. You know, it just, I don't know. I just felt like that was the situation. I don't think it exposed any more vulnerabilities than were already there for Ohio State. I'm not really too worried with what I saw from Ohio State Saturday. Were you?
So no, but it's interesting, right? Because like these teams are like evolving organisms, right? We can't take them like the snapshot of what they are. It changes every week. If I had asked you in Columbus at our game day meeting before the Notre Dame game in the opener, if you knew who Dallin Hayden was, would you have known?
No, I would not have.
Yeah.
I probably should.
I might have said, he's like I would have had a hint in the back of my head would have said, oh yeah, he's a running back they signed. He's pretty well regarded, but that's it. I couldn't.
He was in this class too, right? Wasn't
it? Correct. He's a true freshman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a true freshman. And he looked dynamic. Mm-hmm. I thought the best stat I read, I think it was Bill Landis's column on Rivals, said that Henderson, who did not look dynamic, he did not look like the Trayvon Henderson we know, had 4 negative carries. And Hayden had something like 25, 29. He had a bunch of carries. And he did not have any negative carries. So he hit the hole hard. Like, I don't think he runs a 4.3, but he had burst. He was sound. Like, that's a big spot for a freshman. And he that second half, he carried the ball with class, I thought. So that's, you know, all of a sudden, he could be the bell cow in this game. Now there's optimism, like we talked about on game day, that Mayan Williams comes back. Feet are hard, man, for Trayvon Henderson. Like he just did not look like himself. I think he's one of the most talented running backs in the sport. And he just didn't look like himself because of the foot. So it's going to be, there are going to be a lot of eyes on warmups on Saturday, considering Blake Corum, Mike Morris didn't play. Schoonmaker didn't play. They're a great tight end of Michigan. Like there's a, you know, look, it's November, it's college football, right? People are banged up and everything, but there's, you know, there's some really, really key players who are going to give us this snapshot, this final snapshot here.
The one thing I will concede about Ohio State is, and the way, you know, the way they looked against Maryland, a couple of other ones, this has to be a great, great game for them to get in as a one loss, a non-champion, should Michigan, you know, win the game. I feel less convicted about that than maybe I did. Now, look, if TCU drops a game, would I favor Ohio State against TCU? Probably based on football judgment, maybe not necessarily on resume. I'm not sure TCU is going to drop a game. It seems like one of those years for the Horned Frogs. They keep pulling them out. Oof. But you know, I think that might have changed a little bit. And also if USC can beat Notre Dame. Previously, I might have favored one loss Ohio State. Now I'm not so sure I would, you know, in terms of getting in. Do I think Ohio State's better than USC? Yes, I do. I think they're better on defense. Are they unequivocally better, which is the standard? Then yes, which brings me to this. And I should say this before we wrap it up, because I don't want to ever back away from anything. I've been beating the drum that yes, LSU can get into the playoff, but not before Tennessee. Now that was absent other data that would bring Tennessee back in with the group, which I think that loss not only brought them back in with the group, I think it probably eliminated them because of the way they are.
No Hooker cannot be denied as
right. Exactly.
It just can't.
So you've got two things now. You've got a blowout loss, bad blowout loss to a mediocre team. And you lost your quarterback. So that changes the dynamic and at least opens the door, I think, for, you know, for two loss LSU if they beat Georgia to get in. There are other circumstances where, you know, I could still see, I don't think it's likely if LSU beats Georgia, but I think it's possible and not completely unreasonable that they would be left out. But now, to me, a conference champion, because of what else Tennessee has done, would trump that beatdown that Tennessee put on LSU. And of course, Hooker being gone changes things. So it really, in a lot of respects, Pete, it was a pretty good day for LSU to remove an obstacle from their path of winning their way into the playoff, because I did not think that they could win their way into the playoff solely of their own volition, just by winning their games. They could win their way into contention, but it wouldn't be a lock. There's a giant obstacle out of the way now for LSU with Tennessee gone, for sure.
Absolutely. And again, they need a little
bit of help, but if they go beat Georgia in that, you know, like, again, it was always going to be hard to leave the SEC champion out of this thing, right? Like I could already hear Greg Sankey's, you know, cranium exploding if that did ever happen. And so, again, I think Georgia will sort of do the same serpent squeeze that they did to Kentucky, like the old Alabama teams under Saban did in the early part of the last decade, where they just sort of wrap around and wrap around and wrap around. And, you know, it may not be beautiful. And I don't know if LSU has the dynamism to really go score 31 and beat the Dogs. But I do think that game got a little bit of an adrenaline shot right now. You know, I do, you know, with Tennessee down and, you know, if never count out Brian Kelly in a close game, like he's pretty crafty. He's, you know, he has coached a lot. I think this is his 29th or 30th year. He's coached a lot of football games and knows how to pull strings both as a favorite and an underdog. And so I just, again, I'm not saying LSU is going to win, but I don't expect that to be a 42-0 game. Like, and again, there's the mentality. Look at the mentality Georgia went into the SEC title game with last year, you know. Alabama came out and hit him on a couple deep routes and, you know, the thing was over almost. So a team playing for everything and a team playing for next to nothing from the biggest stakes, there's a dynamic there that's hard to ignore.
Yeah. That was one of those two that I didn't give Alabama a great chance last year because they were coming off that Auburn game. It took them four overtimes to win against Auburn. And you thought, well, if Auburn's going to shut them down, what's this Georgia defense going to do to them? And the emotional side can't be overstated in college football because taking the field that Saturday, Alabama was angry about the disrespect that the no shot, this is still our conference. Now, of course, Georgia ended up getting the ultimate prize, but it played a role for sure. And I'm sure the same thing is going to be on LSU's side, and Brian Kelly will use that masterfully. Now, whether he uses it effectively enough to win the SEC remains to be seen. My nicer, kinder side is winning out on dumb loses more than smart wins. That's this week. Is it? No, look, I'm going to tell
you. Jesus, earlier, before you started, I don't know which game you're referencing, so I'm excited.
I'm referencing the one that you and Gene Wojciechowski tire of hearing from all of us over the course of the week. Was my Superdog pick was Wyoming getting 14 against Boise State, and you get more points for an outright win. You know, a cover is good. So I had conceded that even though Brown Mustard had a fourth quarter lead, looked like we were going to get the outright win there, had a big long touchdown run. And of course, I'm watching the game on my phone while I'm watching SC and also Tennessee. And I'm emotionally more invested in Wyoming, obviously. But when Boise State had scored late and Wyoming had a dreadful night trying to throw the ball, their backup quarterback in, young man called Jaden Clemens, dreadful night throwing the ball. He throws an interception. So I think, okay, well, that's too bad, frustrating, but you're going to take the cover. Then a bolt of life. Boise State fumbles. How do you fumble trying to run off the clock? Brown Mustard picks it up. Now, we need to score a touchdown on the scoop, but instead they get the scoop and they get it down right on the cusp of the red zone, and there's 45 seconds left, Pete. 45 seconds, right? So first play, interception in the end zone. And immediately, two things come to mind. I can't believe I'm going to have to settle for the cover, and the other is I've got my dumb loses more than smart wins. Can't throw an interception in. I can't do it, man, because this guy, Jaden Clemens, was pressed into service. He came in and Craig Bohl and the staff were talking in the post game about loving him up because, you know, he was devastated and he owned it like a champ, you know, like a fully grown man saying, my team trusted me and I got to give them more. And I was like, you know what, man, I hope Jaden Clemens comes back and has a freaking great career for Wyoming because he completed 3 of 16 passes and he completed 3 to Boise State, including 2 crushers in the fourth quarter, and still owned it like a dude. So you know what? That's not dumb loses more than smart wins. That's trying to win and coming up short and living to fight another day. So go get him, Brown Mustard. I'm going to be watching this dude. I want him to have a great career now. I was also had Sonny Dykes in the crosshairs on the whole field goal thing, and it turns out he's smarter than he's so sane that, you know, that it seemed crazy.
Spike on second down, never smart. Dumb
Okay. Bazooka, right? That's what it's called. Bazooka. Okay. Bazooka worked.
David Wilson got us the details.
Bazooka worked. Still doesn't mean she'll spike the ball in second down. Right? Fair enough.
Yeah. Yes. No. Yes.
Especially in that range where you can't pass, essentially. Like passing becomes really, really perilous.
Yeah. So. Right. Yeah. So on a game winning field goals, I softened up on dumb loses more than smart wins right there. But even so, I do hope that young Jaden learned that it's first down. I mean, I love the fact that they were going for the win.
Yeah.
Can't put the ball in harm's way. Can't put the ball in harm's way on first down. Fourth down, okay, whatever. You know, probably even third down, because in that there was terrible wind conditions. You didn't really want to go. You wanted to, that was your best shot to win. Try to win it right there. But you would have kicked the field goal on fourth down. But, you know, don't take the field goal off the board and maximize your opportunities. You know, don't give it up on first down.
What a turnaround by Indianapolis, by the way,
considering, you know, how they looked that night at UTEP that Friday early in the season to now. So give them a ton of credit, man.
They won their division. They're going to the Mountain West championship game.
Yep. That seemed improbable early in the year. Remember they struggled against New Mexico down there? So, hey, give them credit, man.
And the whole Bachmeier thing, too, going.
Bachmeier thing. They fired Tim Plow, the OC. They brought in Dirk Cutter. Now, it's nice to have a former NFL head coach kicking around your staff room. Hey, put your fly fishing pole away, Dirk, for 3 months and come call some plays.
And, you know, they also, their quarterback was terrific.
He's really good.
Yeah, what, Taylen Green, I think, right?
He's really good. I've had a scout call him Baby Vince Young to me. Like, he played
really well. He was the difference in that game. And on a night when Wyoming is, as documented, struggled to throw the football, he did not. Now, Taylen Green was 20 of 34, 211 yards through a touchdown pass. He was really, really good. And I know that game flew under the radar, and it is one of the beauties of the Superdog segment is that it will take one off the beaten path from time to time. That was a really entertaining game, by the way. And tough loss for the Pokes, but a good season considering all the people they lost to the transfer portal, what was expected of them in the preseason. Going to spin it ahead later this week to a lot of Ohio State, Michigan talks and more rivalries. Maybe the little secret sauce that Notre Dame has that could give USC trouble if recent history, as in history of this season, is any indication. We'll talk plenty about that on Wednesday. If it's still up there, go enjoy the nice bromance selfie that Pete and I delivered, even though we were openly mocked by Sarah and Taylor as a result. It was serendipitous. We didn't switch seats or anything to sit by each other. So anyway, that's it. This is the College Game Day podcast. Thank you for listening. Download it wherever it is that you enjoy your podcast. We're here 3 times a week, and we will talk on Wednesday.